Everyone, be seated, please. First matter today, State of Washington versus Chad Chenoweth. Parties are ready to proceed.
We are ready.
Do you wish to reserve any time?
Good morning. Thomas Cameron appearing on behalf of Mr. Chenoweth, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
I've raised three issues in the opening brief. I'm going to focus my argument this morning on one and leave the other two. I'll rest on my brief on those. The one I'm going to talk about this morning is the law of the case doctrine. Unless the court has any questions on the other issues, I'm just going to rest on the brief. So we know from State versus Hickman that the Washington Supreme Court has said that any unobjected to elements in the to convict instruction, the state assumes the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt. Here, each of the two convict instructions included the date. The date is described as on or about July 24th, 2009 and July 24th, 2010. What that did is it created a situation where the state had to prove two acts, one on or about July 24th, 2009, and one on July 24th, 2010. I defy the court to find acts in the record that match up with those dates. In essence, what that means is the court has to dismiss each of those counts with prejudice. Now,
are we to look at the language in the instructions in isolation, or can we consider other evidence, argument, and so forth in trying to determine how the jury would have perceived that instruction?
Well, the law is what is described in the to convict. That is what the jury is told is the law. So from the law of the case doctrine, we're stuck with the to convict. The to convict lays out what the state has to prove to the jury. So, no, you can't. And essentially, that's where the trial court was going. The trial court found that, in essence, this was error. But the way the trial played out, the way the state proved the case, the way the parties argued it, it essentially was harmless error. Two problems there. One, it presupposes error. And if that's the case, fine. But also, there is no harmless error test. This is a sufficiency argument. The state bore the burden of proving acts on those two dates. The state didn't. Under a sufficiency argument, dismissal with prejudice, double jeopardy applies. So unless the court has any other questions.
If an instruction, to convict instruction, included in Skagit County, for example, not truly an element, but under Hickman becomes an element.
Yes.
No evidence particular that was in Skagit County, but in the argument the parties concede verbatim. We agree it was in Skagit County. Wouldn't that be a basis to whether you call it harmless error or invited error or something else? Doesn't that moot the question?
There might be a harmless or not a harmless error, because remember it's a sufficiency argument. Assuming that the defense proposes the instruction or somehow agrees that this is the case, there may be an invited error problem, but that's not the case here.
So if the defense in that example in closing argument says, element says this, we admit it was in Skagit County, that's not good enough?
No, because all the defense is doing at that point is tracking off of the to convict, because remember the to convict is the roadmap. That's what the jury is told is the law. So all the defense is doing is tracking what the to convict says. It's not conceding or anything else. It's just arguing the law as told to the jury. Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Eric Peterson from the Skagit County Prosecutor's Office, and the state's contention is in this case all the parties argue this case based upon the fact that that there are six separate instances of conduct that occurred that were described by the victim during this period of time when she was age just after she turned age 14. In fact, that had actually been an issue, and one of the issues related to the first issue that the defense briefed about, when these acts occurred, because the victim during pretrial interviews had suggested that some of the acts occurred before age 13. That's why we had some of the rape of a child in the secondary counts to begin with.
Well, I think the question is what are we to consider in deciding whether this is the law of the case or not? The defense is appellant is arguing that the instruction says what it says. It says two acts. Two acts weren't proved. Really, we're done, right?
So, well, if you took it just as if you take that language and interpret that to mean that the jury was instructed that it had to find one act of sexual intercourse occurred on 2 days a year apart that were consistent with the victim's date of birth, and that's not how it was argued before the jury. That's not how the court interpreted the motion to dismiss all accounts, which was pursued afterwards. And the trial court said, no, that's not. It might have been more precise to use the word between and between, or the word in other words, that it happened in that time frame. But it was clear how the case was presented to the jury and how it was argued by both parties that the issue was that these acts, these six different acts of sexual conduct that occurred between the victim and the defendant, occurred during this one-year period of time. That's how it was presented to the jury. This is the type of thing which can be the subject to a harmless error analysis when you're looking at what the jury was instructed and whether or not it was clear enough based on those instructions for the jury to infer from what they were deciding. One act of sexual intercourse cannot occur 2 years apart, a whole year apart in date.
The test that we're to employ is whether or not it was clear to the jury what they had to find, and that they had to find that there was one act and that it occurred between these 2 days. I mean, that's our test.
That's the state's position, and that's exactly what the evidence bore out. The victim testified to six different discrete,
but
in the way
defense,
of...
The defense is conceding the evidence. They just say it only proves one act, doesn't prove two. I mean, they're not arguing about that.
Right. But we're contending that, as instructed, it was clear to the jury that they were asked to see if this occurred in this time frame between those 2 dates. Yeah, we didn't... The word between was not in the instruction, but it was clear how the case was argued and presented that that's what the jury was deciding. That's how the trial court ruled when this motion... a motion to dismiss on that basis was raised at the trial court level. And for those reasons, that's not a basis to overturn all of the convictions in this case.
There was no motion to dismiss on the grounds that only one act had been established versus two.
It was a motion to dismiss at the close of the case, the motion to set aside the verdicts as a result of the fact that the state had to prove separate acts for each of the six incidents. And that's how it was raised back before the trial court. If there are any other questions on the issues, other issues raised by the defense, the state would be glad to address those. Otherwise, the state would ask the court to affirm the convictions and sentence.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't even start your clock.
I did great.
You didn't use a minute. It was wonderful.
I think we're all in a hurry to get out and get coffee.
You ended up with 6 minutes reserved, so I'll give you those.
You can
use them as you see fit.
Thank you. Hickman can't be any clearer. The roadmap that the jury uses are the to convict. To convict is the law of the case. The state bore the burden of proving two acts on each count. They didn't. The counts have to be dismissed. That's the argument. We just asked this court to dismiss all of the counts against Mr. Chenoweth with prejudice.
Very well.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. State versus Lardell Courtney.